We're going to expand our weekly video segment to take you into the back shelves of your local video store, back where it says horror videos and where kids are devouring some awful films that we call the video nasties.
Are you freebasing? Inquiring minds want to know.
I have to break free from this culture of mechanical reproductions and the thick incrustations dying on the surface.
Fuck the prime time, bitch!
The pain, I can assure you, will be exquisite. As for our deaths, come with me and be immortal.
We have such sights to show you.
We've got to return some videotape.
Hello, horror hounds, and welcome to the It Slays podcast. I'm your humble host, Rowan.
And I'm an unmanned lawnmower, Mike.
I'm Colton.
Hey, it's Jill.
I like that it only took us like 10 seconds for someone to drop a lawnmower joke in this one. So
too soon.
Yeah,
you
I was waiting for it. I thought maybe I'd try to throw you off and introduce myself with like something witty about a lawnmower, but I was like, you know what? I know Mike's probably already got something up his sleeve.
Oh, I already got it. It's
not
up my
brand
sleeve
for me.
Down
I thought
my
we were just
leg.
Gonna have an extensive discussion about Lawnmower Man.
But, oh. I've actually, fun fact,
ooh,
I've never seen
now.
Lawnmower
we're,
Man.
We're dropping hints at, like, maybe a potential future episode.
There we
maybe,
go.
Maybe.
Lawnmower Man.
Lawnmower Man 2. Two.
So, we are back, and this is our first episode of our second themed month. Are you sick of this yet, people, or what? But this is a good one. This is Fan Pick February.
Fan favorite.
Is it fan favorite or fan pick?
Come on, the alliteration, Rowan.
Oh my God, ruin it already. But I say that, and you know, you guys kind of picked this episode. You kind of didn't. I just kind of said, you know, this is what it is. But I mean, in overall, you guys picked it.
Well, behind the scenes, we had a lengthy discussion, you and I, about what we should do here. And there was one other movie that was in the running, but I guess the timing just didn't work out.
Yeah, so. you were really pushing for us to try to do Ginger Snaps 2, I believe. But,
oh, absolutely, yeah.
Soon enough. Don't you worry.
But before we get into any of that and get into this grand old episode, we got to talk about what have we been consuming? What have we been watching? What have we been reading? What have we been listening to? What have we been up to in general? Jill, what do you got for some smut for us? I'm sure you got something going.
You know,
Minotaur foreskins.
You guys
for sure.
Gotta wait. I can't just jump into the smut like first thing.
Wait, can it be foreskin February?
Oh my God.
Wait, we need a third one for it to be alliteration.
It is my birth month,
furry,
and we will not defile it as such.
I'm putting
furry
that on the
foreskin
list.
Foreskin February.
Foreskin February.
Oh, okay. But yeah, I'm going to start with a little game I've been playing. Might have heard it. It's called Overcooked 2.
Nice.
Oh.
It has ruined my life. It's hard as
I
hell.
I have PTSD.
Why
from
is
that
it
game?
So hard?
It really is.
You know, it's just like one of those little games. It's like a co-op game you can play, so you can like play with someone else, or you can switch characters to like a different character, but you're still playing them. And basically, you're just running around in a kitchen and making dishes for people and doing the dishes. And I don't know, shit got crazy. Like, I have way too much anxiety to play that game. At one point, like, this is like 5 minutes into the game, you're cooking in a hot balloon in the air, on a kitchen in a hot balloon in the air. Halfway through, you're already failing because it's hard, right? And then your balloon, like your hot balloon bursts, you fall to the ground. And it does not stop there. Then it's like, oh, well, here's a kitchen on the street. And people are walking across the street and you have to like wait to cross the street because there's cars with food. Anyways, it just like really pissed me off. So like, I don't know if I'll be going back to that game. So let's get to books. I'm currently reading and almost finished the first Crescent City book, House of Earth and Blood by Sarah J. Maas. And she has the third book of that series coming out this week. So I have like a fire lit under my ass to try and finish it so I can read the new book. But I'm eating it up. I love it. I'm like really excited to read the rest of it, of the series. Now to the smut, I am also reading A Blue Ribbon Romance, which is the sequel to the Minotaur Milking Farm book that I mentioned last week. But this is just the last book, but retold in the Minotaur's point of view. Very spicy.
Oh, no, they did a Twilight. Didn't they do that?
They did, and I read that one, too.
And right. 50 Shades of Grey, and.
Yeah, they just, you know what? I don't care. I'm here for it.
We have 100 pages of content, and we're going to Minotaur milk it as much as we can.
The proverbial milking it, as it were.
By the way, you didn't see, because it's a podcast, the, like, hand job gesture I made, but oh. I feel like it's very important, you know.
It is very important.
To everybody, needs to know that I was making that gesture while saying
it's very milking. Important to gesticulate.
Yeah.
And testiculate.
Oh.
I don't know. Me and Rowan just finished filming the stream screams where we saw testicles go down a garbage disposal. But anyway.
Oh, God.
Right. So look out for that if you're a patron. And then I didn't really watch much because I've been reading, I guess. So I watched Renfield finally, and it was fucking awful. And
thank you.
Yes.
I'm so upset because I love Nicholas Holt. I'm a skins girly. I'm a warm bodies girly. I love Nick Cage. And it had the premise of being like Dracula and being really funny. But then they put fucking Awkwafina in it and this weird police subplot and just fucking ruined it for me. So really mad about that, actually. I rewatched Shallow Hal. Which is, you know, an early 2000s gem. It's a film. It's not Jack Black's best, but it's definitely aged. But it was nice to go back and watch something that, you know, I kind of watched a lot as a kid. Me and my friends would always put this on. We thought it was like really funny. It's not as funny anymore, but it's okay. I finished that Natalia Grace docuseries that I brought up last time. Colton gave me shit for giving it a bad rating. Yeah, it's awful. There's like a huge lack of integrity in it. And the whole thing just seems like really convoluted and disingenuous. And I don't like that. That's all I've watched. I did a cool thing yesterday, though. I went to this like huge art installation in Philly. It's called Otherworld Philly. There's another one in Columbus, Ohio. But it's a really cool interactive art installation. It has like 55 rooms and they're all different like themes and like styles of art. And I think a lot of it is local artists working on it. But there's like little puzzles and interactive things you can do in it. And spent like a couple hours there. It was really fun. Would like to go back and do the puzzles and see like what actually is going on. But yeah, I thought that was cool. Mike, what have you been doing?
Honestly, not much. I've been consumed by a little game called Elden Ring. So good. It's been taking over my fucking life. I can't believe I had a like kind of aborted start to it and said, I don't know if I'm going to play this. Why did I waste my money on it? And then like 4 days later I changed my class and now I'm just like literally living for it. Like there are days when all I can think about is like how long until I can get home and eat and get into Elden Ring. Like I've been watching some trash TV and stuff, of course, catching up on Housewives of Salt Lake City, shout out, and crying to Drag Race, but like honestly nothing has engaged me like Elden Ring. Like I'm just sinking so many hours into it, it's frightening. So that's like literally all I have. I've been an Elden Ring girly now. I'm a convert. I know everybody's on Baldur's Gate and shit like that, but like
Pal
I'm
World
just
right
2 years
now.
Behind that's slavery game, you know,
that Pokemon slave
I was gonna say Baldur's Gate's your 2026 game.
Yeah, exactly. So like literally Black Friday of probably next year, I'll get Baldur's Gate and it'll be fine.
Nice.
Have you guys played Pal World or?
I'm thinking about getting it.
What'd you say, Jill? I talked over you.
Sorry, I said I'm thinking about getting it.
Oh, okay. No, I haven't played Pal World. I mean, when Elden Ring first came out, I think I put something like 120 hours into it in 10 days. Like
sweaty.
Like every single day. It was like 12 hours a day.
Sweaty behavior.
It was, yeah. I was unemployed at the time. It made sense.
Yeah, it's definitely.
Myself, like lately, I haven't really been playing too many games either. Like the last week, I've been part of a game jam, which my brother tries to do every year, like the global game jam where you try and develop some sort of game in a week. So this year, I
thought you were just playing games all night.
No,
I
was like, okay. No, it's like every year they like put on an event and, you know, people kind of do it all over the world. There's actually one here in Newfoundland as well that people put off. But it's just, I don't have a game dev background, so I was kind of like, sure, I'll come on, I'll try and learn Blender or Unreal Engine or whatever you need. So, dude, I've been, no joke, probably like minimum 14 hours a day, like, working on this stuff, trying to develop something with my brother and, you know, one of his friends. And, of course, in, like, classic game jam fashion that I've heard, it's just, like, in the end, it doesn't really come together and it doesn't render out well, and it's kind of a bit of a nightmare, so... You know, all in all, I learned a lot, but I'm very tired. I actually asked the guys here on the podcast today to push recording by an hour just so I could have time to even watch this movie. So I've been incredibly busy just with that the past week.
So can we expect a It Slays podcast video game soon? Or
oh yeah, that's what I was developing, but it just took so long to render each one of your beard hairs that, you know, I just
hell yeah,
yeah, that you know, I'm a little bit behind.
You shouldn't say that about Jill, but that's okay.
That's my mustache.
In addition to the game jam before that, I went to the theater, did a double feature of Mean Girls and American Fiction.
There
which,
you go.
That's, you know, it's almost as popular as Barbenheimer, I've heard. Mean Girls was pretty bad, not gonna lie. I didn't think I was a big Mean Girls guy. But when I was watching this movie, I was like, you know what? Maybe that original movie is special to some degree, because seeing it like get destroyed like this and felt like completely soulless musical rendition, it kind of annoyed me for basically the whole movie.
Oh wow.
You can't recreate a classic like that.
Well, it's also weird because usually musicals, they exist in this heightened reality where like anything could happen and it's just crazy, and like that's kind of part of the fun, that people can break out into song and dance.
Yeah.
Where it feels like the original Mean Girls existed in more of like a heightened reality than this musical. So it's weird. Like, it feels kind of boring the entire time. And most of
the jokes. Yeah, there was all those weird, like, Nature Channel cutaways. In
exactly.
The
yeah. Well, that very scene where she walks into, like, the cafeteria and you see, like, all the different, you know, high school groups kind of, like, acting like different animals. Like, that doesn't happen in the musical. And I'm like,
Oh my God.
I didn't think I remembered Mean Girls like this, when I was watching this movie,
you could have
like,
a Lion King moment where they turn into animals and then break into song, like doubly absurd.
That's wild.
Yeah, like don't get me wrong, they do bring back like the animal motif thing, like probably like 10 minutes later, but it was just kind of like, I don't know, I just noticed all these beats that weren't the same as the original, but also they were worse. Also, I forget who they have playing Regina George and Caddy, but like they're not even close to...
Renee Rapp is Regina George. Yeah.
Well, I don't know Renee Rapp from, I think, really much, but she was not as good as Rachel McAdams.
She played Regina George on Broadway, I'm pretty sure. So,
this is the thing as well. I thought no one could really sing in this movie. I thought most of it was bad. The only song that like had a good singer, I thought, was one near the end, who's sung by kind of like the lesbian artsy girl. I don't know her name, but she's actually the actress that like voiced Moana in the Disney movie, so she could sing.
Oh, nice.
Everybody else I didn't think could really sing. There was a couple of okay numbers or that were at least like visually interesting, but overall, yeah, not, I don't think it's very
that's
good.
What happens when you get TikTok people who think they can sing.
There's also one dance that was kind of framed through like 20 different TikToks on screen of everyone doing the dance.
Gosh.
And I was just like, oh, okay, this is
that's cringe.
This is the marketing manager just trying to, you know, make a dance go viral. So yeah, definitely not for me. And maybe just want to go home immediately and watch the next Mean Girls or the original Mean Girls. But right after that, I went to American Fiction, which thankfully was much better. I usually have notes in front of me of who wrote and directed this, but I know it's a new director. I think this is a directorial feature debut. Cord Jefferson, his name is. And I mean, this movie just got nominated for Best Picture. I know Jeffrey Wright got an acting nom. Sterling K. Brown got an acting nom. So yeah, this one was just all around just a great movie. It's about essentially a writer who is sick of seeing representations of kind of like black pain and suffering in media. So the movie is very cognizant of kind of like what I would say is kind of a trend in movies for at least the last 10 years of just like every single movie that is written by, you know, black artists or has a predominantly black cast has to have, I don't know, an unarmed man getting shot by a police officer at some point in it, or it has to revolve around racism and slavery. And kind of like the character in the movie is just kind of a little bit annoyed by that trend and almost feels like it's another form of subjugation of every single movie. Like, you can't just have a black movie that's just about black people living. It has to involve these themes. So it was an interesting point of view that, like, as someone who's completely not part of that demographic, obviously, that group, seeing that brought to screen and brought to screen like so well and actually like funny and entertaining. And yeah, I like how it kind of spirals out of control. It gets really meta. And it was just awesome. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. And specifically in the third act, like how some things get really wild and a couple of like little twists and turns, I was like, very ballsy way to make this movie, especially for a directorial debut. I guess he clearly had something to say. And yeah, I don't know. I think it shows off on screen. I definitely would recommend checking it out.
I can't wait.
Rowan,
to
was
see
that
it.
Was that in your area yet? No.
Yeah, it's playing. It just started playing not too long ago. I plan on going to see it, I think, this week coming.
Nice. Have you been checking anything else in theaters or?
Oh, yeah, I have. Great things. Great, great, amazing things that should have won Best Picture. But,
like what?
I'll start with this because I have the list out. So,
oh my God, you got to go in list order.
No,
come
listen,
on, Rowan,
oh,
shake it up
Jesus.
A little.
I got my geek on and I wanted to share. I've also been video gaming. So I was very proud of myself. Like a true gamer, I finally beat my, my Lego Marvel Super Heroes game. the epitome of gaming, but I got really nerdy and I'm now playing Star Wars Fallen Order, which...
Oh, that's supposed to be good.
I'm not that far into it yet, but I've enjoyed it. It's okay. I've said many
it's
times,
pretty good. Yeah.
I'm not a huge like Star Wars guy, but I just wanted to try something different. So I was like, hey, I saw it was on sale. I was like, I'm going to pick it up and try to get my video game on. But okay, so in the theater, I did get to see what some may call the movie of 2024. I went and saw The Beekeeper, which is Jason Statham's new vehicle. Me and a friend went and saw it just because I was interested. We're kind of, in this mode of like one-man revenge times. It started with John Wick, but like we had Silent Night come out just like a couple months ago, and then this comes out, and then I forget what it is, but there's like something else coming out that's also a one-man revenge movie that I've got like checked off on my list. Obviously, I wasn't thrilled. This is directed by David Ayer. And I have, opinions on that. But you know what? It was pretty fun. It's just, it's like a Jason Statham action movie where every 5 minutes you're guaranteed like some real corny pun about bees or honey or the hive or like something. And then he punches you in the face, right? So, how can you go wrong with that?
So many ways. I'm sorry.
I started watching Monarch on Apple TV. I signed up for it. The reason I signed up for it is because I actually rewatched Killers of the Flower Moon until I hadn't seen it yet, and she wanted to see it. So I was like, hey, I kind of also want to watch that Godzilla show. So good reason for me to purchase Apple TV.
I think after a couple more watches, Killers of the Flower Moon is going to be your first 6-star movie on Letterboxd, because every single time I see you log, it just goes up an extra half star.
I know. I do like it more and more every time I watch it. Lily Gladstone, man. I'm just like, she's awesome. She's awesome. I really love her performance in it. But yeah, I did get to see quite a few things. Another rewatch I did end up doing was that I rewatched Popstar, Never Stop Stopping, which is the Andy Samberg film, The Lonely Island made, which I love. It's super funny. It's basically him kind of being, a Justin Bieber. It's done in mockumentary style where, he goes from the highest of highs to the lowest of lows, and lots of like SNL cast in it, and lots of like famous musicians in it that may not be great cameos anymore, like Adam Levine is in it a lot, and I'm like, oh yeah, that didn't age too well. But the movie's so funny, like I was still crying laughing. And really, I've been up to watching movies that I've kind of missed throughout 2023. So I got to watch Joyride, which I thought was all right. I thought it had some funny things in it.
Ooh, the Lily Sobieski movie?
The what?
I don't know. I don't know
the
who
Lily
that is.
The Lily Sobieski Paul Walker movie? How dare you?
No,
from 2006?
No, Adele Lim is the director of this one. It's basically like I don't even know really how to describe it.
It's trying to do like Girls Trip or Rough Night from a few years back.
And like I like a lot of the actresses in it and stuff, and I think like separately they're pretty funny, but I just think overall as a movie it didn't really like take it over the top like I think they could have, which was a shame because it definitely like seemed like it was gonna be really good.
And you still haven't seen Stephanie Soo's Oscar nominated performance in Everything Everywhere All at Once, and she's having a co-lead in that movie, so you know.
I'll check that out. That will be my 2026 watch.
There you go.
But he did see Girls Trip Part 2, so
yeah,
there you go. Love to hear it.
I checked out Theater Camp. This was on Disney Plus, and I like this one. This was pretty good. Done, you know, kind of Best in Show style, another like mockumentary type film. I thought it was pretty funny. It was pretty charming. Mm-hmm. Molly Gordon like wrote and directed it with Nick Lieberman. I love Molly Gordon, so I was sold there. I was like, yes, please, everything. Molly Gordon. One I won't talk about because I never talk about horror movies. I did get to check out The Sacrifice Game, which was Shudder's Christmas release that just passed, that stars, I can't think of his name, but it's the guy that played Aladdin in the live-action Aladdin movie.
Oh.
So I never saw that, but I just thought it was interesting that like he hasn't really done anything else, and then this is what he did. Like I said, I don't really like to comment just in case, but yeah, it was a movie. Now this one, I feel bad. Christmas episode, Jill. We gave Jill a really rough time for watching Tim Allen and, watching people.
So
I'm at work and I'm trying out a movie site. Is it legal? Is it not legal? I don't know. So I'm just like clicking on stuff to see if I can get it to work. And I may have watched Rob Schneider's newest stand-up film. Cause let me explain. It's like a car.
You have time for that. But no time
Jesus.
For good movies.
It's like a car accident. Yeah. It's like you just, I was like, I'm only going to see how bad this is for 3 minutes. And it progressively is just like more people are dead. The car is mangled. And I'm like, I just have to see what's going on. All I'm saying is if you don't like Rob Schneider, which I don't really, like politics aside, I just don't think he's that good. It's worth it for a laugh because like, throughout it, he's trying to like do jokes, and people are just like screaming, "You can do it!" in the middle of his jokes, because obviously they only know him from like the Water Boy, and it's just awesome to see him really flustered that no one cares about his stand up. And you know, it's just like,
I mean, and also his like 10-year stint on Saturday Night Live, but it's fine.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just stupid.
I would never. I'm not defending him. I'm just saying, you know. Perhaps the stakes are even higher, which makes his fall even more catastrophic, which I'm kind of into.
Yeah, it was stupid. So anyway, let's talk about like a good movie. So I watched Eileen.
Fuck you. I hate you.
Yeah. And I really, really like this. Very like Hitchcockian movie.
It's Otessa. Fuck.
I really enjoyed it. I thought the twists and turns were really interesting in it, and it was a good time. I don't want to say much because I know it like just recently like kind of came available to like buy or rent or whatever.
I was gonna say, can you tell me how you saw it, or do we have to do that after the podcast?
Might be an after the podcast thing, but I know you can rent. Okay. You can wait. Rent it everywhere right now.
Oh, okay.
I was just in a place I couldn't rent it, so yeah. Sure. I got to check out Cat Person. This was a little underwhelming. I was really looking forward to this. Just from the description, I knew of the, I think, what was it, New York Times or whatever. I think the original short story is from
The New Yorker.
The New Yorker. So I was kind of interested of this weird, like, thriller horror take on, you know, women's experience dating, and it just didn't land. It should stay a short story. There were some cool horror aspects to it, but you kind of predicted everything within like the first 2 minutes, even though they kept trying to twist and turn it. And the two leads are just like not likable in this. So as much as they want you to like really like feel what the lead actress is going through, like, I'm also just like, she's literally the most annoying character I've ever seen. So it's like really hard for me to feel bad for her. And also, I don't know, like, you know, don't try to fuck weird men that you already are saying to yourself is like definitely weird and a rapist. I just maybe don't do that. Bad decision making. And then a couple more I checked out. I checked out Retribution. I won't say anything about that. That's the new Liam Neeson movie. It was early in the morning. I was just watching something. It's speed. That's what it is, in a car.
Of course.
And of course, he has kids that are in danger. So I just like that he's cornered that market. And, you know, do your thing. Get paid. I'm sure he's still making money off, like, episode one. So, you know, do whatever you can do. I checked out The Marsh King's Daughter, which I know here. I don't know anywhere else, but I know here played in the theater for, like, 1 week, and then they pulled it. This is her name Daisy Ridley, the girl from the newer Star Wars films? So this was, like, her, like, first film after Star Wars. I was more interested because of Ben Mendelsohn, who I absolutely love. This was pretty mid. I kind of felt, if you guys recall when I talked about going to see where the crawdads sing, that's kind of how I felt. Like, I felt like I was robbed of a possible good movie. It's about, you know, it's like a pretty generic, like, I say generic, it's just like a daughter of a kidnapper slash killer who escapes prison, and it deals with, like, family drama, except they're all, like, kind of bayous. They live in the swamp. It wasn't very good. One thing I would watch that I really did like that apparently no one on Letterboxd liked, so I was kind of depressed, was Foe.
You are the lone Foe super stan. You're the only person I've seen that has given this movie a positive review, so.
Yeah.
I was wondering why you brought that up like four times. Yeah. I'm like, why? What's with Foe all of
He just
sudden?
Wants us all to watch it, I so do. We can all suffer.
I really, really liked it. Even if you don't like the movie, I guess, if you are into Paul Mescal nude and pretty much a full 2 hours where he's
Wait, that's what that was. Okay.
Where he's just boning and he's just like showering and he's just like, there's lots of Paul Mescal butt in it.
Is he boning Saoirse Ronan?
Yeah. They're a couple. She's fantastic in it. I could see where people wouldn't like this. It's very slow. I don't know what you would call it. I always call it grounded science fiction. Like, it could be it is set, like, I think, like, a long time in the future, but it seems like now there's just, like, little differences. And, it's not dealing with technology overly, even though, you know, there is a twist, all that. But it's more like it's a drama about a married couple and just kind of like growing in and out of love and, like, you know, taking your partner for advantage and all that kind of stuff. And I thought it was really beautiful. It shot really well. The score is really fantastic. It's a vibe. And that's like my kind of science fiction where I was just like, it's more so a vibe than what's going on. It really seems like an extended Black Mirror episode.
Yeah, like lo-fi sci-fi. Yeah. I probably would like it at least.
Yeah, I really feel like, you know, you guys might like it. So it was enjoyable. Then obviously I had to do the double feature. I did see All of Us Strangers. I know you said, Colton, you hadn't seen it, so I won't say much.
I hadn't seen it yet. Don't spoil it. I'm going to watch it probably within the next 2 or 3 days.
That might be like my movie of last year. I bawled like
Better than Killers of the Flower Moon, the 6-star movie.
Yeah, it might be like an 8-star movie. It was a rough watch. It's someone who, I mean, obviously, like, if you watch a trailer, it's about like a person dealing with like the loss of their parents. As someone that has lost their parents, it hit me in the feels. So it's just a movie dealing with grief. So,
A24.
Yeah, it's an A24 movie, although it's not A24.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think that one actually is. It seems like it would
be, Searchlight. It's Searchlight. And the last couple I watched, I got to see Bottoms finally. I really enjoyed it. Emma Siegelman. Obviously, I've talked about it on the podcast. Like, I love Shiva Baby. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, I was really going to enjoy this. And, I mean, who doesn't love Rachel Snow? She's fantastic.
Oh, my God. She is such a queen. She needs an Oscar for her, like, you know,
snarkiness.
You live in LA. How dare you? Yeah. You don't have an eating disorder. Get one. That little video. She needs an Oscar for this.
So, yeah, it was super funny. Fantastic. I checked out George Carlin doing it again. I'm still on my George Carlin kick. I'm in the 90s now. This is from the 90s. This is the official old man Carlin. This is where he gets cranky, where he gets, you know, very political and stuff. And
gets cranky.
I'm curious. Are you going to watch the AI George Carlin thing that was just made?
So I did see about 2 minutes of it.
Okay.
I don't really see the uproar. Like, it doesn't sound like him. You can 100% tell it's not him. There's no video. It's just audio.
Yeah, I think it says up front that it makes a joke about not being George Carlin, that it's AI and whatnot, and that he'd hate it.
But, like, even the jokes, like, I was like, hey, they're not funny. They're not really jokes. And, like, the delivery, the cadence, the voice, it just doesn't sound like George Carlin. Maybe, like, a tiny bit if you didn't know George Carlin.
Yeah, I was going to say, for someone who, you know, I've seen clips of George Carlin, but I've never watched an actual stand-up special of his. So, for me, when I heard it, I was like, oh, yeah, it kind of sounds like his thing, but it just sounds like kind of like cranky old man comedy is kind of like what I heard.
Cranky old man yelling at clouds,
You're not wrong, yeah.
And then I'll end it off. I watched two documentaries. I, you know, like the rest of the world, I watched American Nightmare on Netflix, and...
Worth a watch? I haven't seen that yet.
It was pretty wild. I kept saying...
Okay.
I don't want to say much because it just came out. It's twisty and turny. Made me feel like a piece of shit at the end because I'm blaming people that shouldn't be blamed and all this kind of stuff. And
oh, wow. All right.
It's pretty much just an example of why, you know, people like the FBI and the police are just, you know, pieces of shit, I guess.
Dirt bags.
And then I watched Hell Camp, Teen Nightmare, which is another Netflix documentary about wilderness teen therapy. A certain one from like the 90s, like 80s, 90s. And it was all right. I just didn't really like the way it was shot and framed. They seemed to show like a lot of sympathy. The guy that it's about is dead. Like, he's not around. But, like, there was a lot of things that they just kind of, like, skim past. And they seemed to, like, really kind of give his family, who, like, lived off the wealth of these scams, like, a lot of, you know, like, respect and let them kind of, like, air out. Like, our dad was a great man to us, and he was fantastic. And, you know, and it's one of those things then, like, someone will, you know, be like, well, when I was 12, he molested me, and then they never talk about it again.
So... Did they get the family involved, like, directly in the documentary for testimonials and stuff? Oh, well.
Yeah, they 100%
They were probably literally like, okay, let's give him a bit of a puff piece, but also let's not get sued by, like, defaming somebody. But I think you can defame the dead, I think.
I think so.
So maybe it's something else.
And then, I feel like you're probably in safe place to defame a pedophile, so...
I don't think that's even defaming it at that point, you know?
Yeah. So I just thought it was weird, like, once that comes up, they bring that kind of stuff up, like, with 2 minutes left of the documentary and then don't touch it. So
no.
Yeah.
Are they angling for a Hell Camp 2?
I don't think, because they just say everything at the end, like, you know, like, the writing at
the black
end.
Screen?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And it just ends on a weird note where it's just like, it's like, the family recognizes that these sexual claims and wish to not remark on it and wish to remember their father as the great man he was.
Nice.
So
vomit.
Yeah, I was kind of like, I'm wondering if, like, there's some sort of family connection with the maker of this or something. And so I'm gonna end it on that dour note. it was skippable. So yeah, that's what I've been doing. But let's get into our film, our fan pick, picked by us. As I stated blast episode. The reason why we chose this is because it's the most asked for movie since we've been a podcast, which is 2012 Sinister. I can't believe we haven't done this one yet. So
I can't believe this is the most requested episode, just, you know, with all like horror canon, you know. We only did The Exorcist like, you know, 4 or 5 months ago.
Months ago, yeah.
Makes insane sense, though. I read that I think like biologically, like physically, Sinister, people's reactions to it, by that it's the scariest movie.
Yeah,
or it's ranked the scariest movie.
That's because they put heart rates on people and we're not to technically get it. You know, they have the data.
Right. But, I'm just saying, it's, you know, it's got that title, the scariest movie. So
I tell you what, The Medium 2 weeks ago was far scarier than this. So, you know.
Oh my God, you're just blowing your cover right away.
I honestly have one second to digress. Just
yes,
to...
yes, let's do it. Breaking new ground before the synopsis. Let's go.
No. I just want to say again, I keep thinking about The Medium, so, like, what a good movie. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Thanks,
like,
Steven.
I keep telling people about it, so, yeah.
He knows it looks fantastic. He doesn't know what they said, but he knows it looked great. I'm just making fun of you, Mike, because you were playing Elden Ring.
I know.
Oh my God, I forgot about that detail. See, that's what you get for being the guy who edits the podcast as opposed to being the guy who was on the podcast 2 weeks ago. I completely forgot about that.
It's all right. Anyway, let's get into the trailer and then we'll get into the synopsis and first experiences.
I got a really good feeling about this house. What is this?
Within the home movies of 5 murdered families, an ancient evil waits to enter our world. Once you see him, nothing can save you.
Get the kids. We have to leave here now.
Sinister, rated R, in theaters October 5th.
Sinister was directed by Scott Derrickson and written by Scott Derrickson and C. Robert Cargill, and the story is as follows. After a decade without a bestseller, true crime writer Ellison Oswald moves his family into a new home known for its cheap market value and grisly past. So when he discovers the existence of a snuff film showcasing the deaths of the previous homeowners, he hopes to identify the killer, but more importantly, get some good material for his next book. And with that, it doesn't take long before Ellison discovers that a supernatural entity is behind the murders, and that he and his family are its next targets.
So is this our first time seeing Sinister, or are you... Me and Colt never did come up with the term for, like, the... You got the A24, bro. What's the Blumhouse? Like, I said it was closer to a...
Blumhouse, bro? Maybe.
Maybe. I mean, I don't
alliteration?
Know.
Bum
a Blumhouse. A blow.
Bumhouse.
A blow. Oh.
Bumhouse Brad. There you
a
go.
A blow. Let's call them a blow.
A blow. I said it was closer.
We
got to
workshop this. Can't
yeah,
go blows.
We'll workshop it. I said it was closer to like a brony or something. I don't know. But
no.
Yeah, is this our first time seeing it? Let's start with you, Mike.
Believe it or not, I actually have never seen this before.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's one of those that, like, I was like, how have I never seen this? I have to watch this very soon. And then it would literally immediately just go back in the, like, archive of my brain of things I want to watch and just never do. So, yeah, this was my first time, and it was weird. And everybody that I told, like, oh, yeah, I'm watching Sinister this weekend for the podcast, they're like, oh, do you like that one? And I'm like, I have no idea. And then everyone's like, how the fuck do you, like, watch horror movies and not seen it? I don't know. I feel like there was just a boom of horror movies around that time, and I just sort of didn't get to see any. What about you, Colton?
Yeah, I did watch this at the time when it came out. I was just Googling it because in my memory, I was like, I think this came out, like, a couple months before or after Insidious, and I remember seeing that and thinking it was pretty scary at the time, but it's a year later, so, you know, this came out a little after. But yeah, I checked this out in theaters. It was kind of back in the day, I think Empire Theaters here in, you know, Newfoundland, where basically most of these horror screenings would be pretty much sold out. So I remember going to see this, the audience, like, reacting to all the different scares. I remember being very unsettled by all the, you know, the Super 8 film footage, you know, which we'll definitely get into discussing. But I haven't seen the sequel, and I think this was my only time rewatching it since I saw it in theater, so it was nice to revisit it. What about you, Jill?
Yeah, so I actually intentionally stayed the fuck away from Sinister for my 32 years because everyone
it's the scariest
has
movie ever.
Yeah, everyone's like, it's so scary. And every friend I've asked, they're like, oh, it's so spooky, bro. Or it's really scary. Like, it's the only thing that's actually scared me. So I'm not going to watch that. I am certainly not going to watch that alone. But I did. Sure. I'm very proud of myself. But yeah, first time. How about
you,
Ryan?
We're also proud of you, Jill.
Thank you.
So proud. Yeah, so I've seen this one other time. That might be a lie. I might have seen it twice. But like Mike, I didn't see this till like, wait, I only saw this a couple years ago for the first time. I kind of have a funny time. Exilia had gone away. We had just moved to Toronto. And so I was like home alone in a new apartment. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to put on some horror movies, like shut off all the lights, watch it. And so that was my first time ever seeing it. Then Exilia wanted to see it. I watched it with her before. But yeah, like Mike, I kind of missed it when it came out. I was in my mode then where I had just kind of given up on, like, new horror movies, and I was just like, no, I'm good. I'm just going to watch, you know, like, Friday the 13th and stuff and stick to my...
Yeah, for the 7,000th time.
Yeah.
Was it Follows that brought you back, like, a couple of years later? Because, obviously, I think that was 2014, right?
Yeah, I'd say that probably was, because I did, you know, I did miss It Follows in the theater, too. It was actually Brad that got... that showed me It Follows. He's like, you got to watch this, and... I remember not looking forward to it, and then I was blown away. So
yeah. I saw that one in the theaters as well.
Yeah, I'm very jealous of that. So, but yeah, so this is not my first time seeing this, but the second time seeing it by myself. Well, let's get into the I don't know how many fucking times can we reference Super 8 footage, I guess, of it all. Yeah, let's get into it.
The pool parties and the barbecues of it all.
The pool party and the barbecues. There we go.
Yeah. Do we just want to start with that right up front? I mean, it is the opening of the movie, I guess. The, you know,
yeah,
what,
we start with Super 8
Hanging Around
footage,
or whatever it's called.
Hanging Around. I can't remember. I love the names of the Super 8 footage.
Very ironic. But also true, because they start out like every like roll of film, it's always like what it actually says, like they will be barbecuing or they will be swimming, and then later on it cuts to like the snuff portion of the film. So I thought that was a really cool detail.
Yeah, I think it's also the sort of thing, like, let's say if someone did discover the tapes, you just look at them and like, who's gonna actually like watch old home videos of just like if you found in a random house? So it is, you know, just a nice little detail where it's like you watch it in the beginning, it's like, oh, these are just like home videos, obviously kind of like shot weird, you know, if you're filming your, you know, your family that way, you probably are a serial killer. But you know, this I think is a really effective opening scene. Like, this is the sort of thing, like, once again, it's been over a decade since I've seen this, that I was like, man, my first note is like, this is an insane opening scene, just so effective. And also, like, I can just see like so many people being disturbed by it right off the top, just seeing, you know, four people get hung from a tree, you know, just like that. Also, like all the like geometry like involved in it, like kind of like the logistics of figuring out like, oh, we're gonna cut the branch and lift them all up. Yeah. Like, it's weirdly creative for such a like a macabre scene. It is that
it was like a Rube Goldberg thing, you know?
Yeah, it was wild. And then I'm like watching them like, yeah, and then I'm watching and being like, okay, these are all obviously stunt performers. Can you see their rigs on the back? And what is this? Like, yeah. It's just, I don't know. It was a wild little scene. That like I remember obviously the Super 8 film, but I didn't remember that it actually opened with it. So yeah, very strong opening, I thought.
Well, it's kind of interesting too, especially, you know, with now that we have hindsight of like where Blumhouse has ended up with, like, you know, Five Nights at Freddy. They're like really this like pop horror kind of house where like this is pretty like risque for like a mainstream, I'm trying to make a bunch of money, you know. I'm sure that was the vision they had, like most companies would have. Like, we're making a ton of money pounding out these horror movies. But like, I was trying to think of other examples of mainstream horror or just movies in general that like deal with like snuff movies. And like, there really isn't, you know, much. Like, obviously, I think someone, you know, would probably say like 8mm, but that wasn't like, that wasn't really like a big, you know, like blockbuster movie.
Thesis. We just did it.
I was gonna say, okay, since we brought it up, I just, like, one of my big notes with, like, 8 exclamation points was, like, how much this reminds me of Teases.
I guess one thing I want to do, because I gotta get it out of the way, because I feel, I didn't want to spoil it in the first experiences or anything like that, but I can't really talk about this movie comfortably without saying it. I will tell you, when I first watched this, this movie scared the fucking shit out of me.
Oh, like, my God, 2 episodes in a row we're gonna talk about
hands
it
down, scared the shit out of me. That's what's really funny about this pick, because yeah, I kept thinking, I'm like, oh my God, 2 movies in a row, this is like the first time ever.
Mm-hmm. 2 for 2.
But like, that's how effective I thought the snuff stuff was. I thought the snuff stuff was like terrifying in this.
So I'll agree with that as well. I think the snuff stuff is excellent and very scary and unsettling. And then
absolutely
the bad makeup and white faces and raccoon-eyed children, less so, I would say.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I still don't know if I knock it against the movie, because I do, like, I think it's fun. I'm just kind of like, yeah, like, okay, like, you know, I mean, I've seen worse offenses, and, you know, no one's watching this movie except for me, if it's just about snuff.
Oh, I'm 100% watching this movie.
Well,
just about
okay,
snuff.
Maybe
or,
yes, but not or the general public.
Or snuff with, oh, there's like a, you know, an entity or like a sinister intention or some like occult behind it. I think that would have been strong enough for a movie. And I actually think there's, you know, it is a strong movie for the first hour before anything else gets introduced, really. So I disagree a little bit with that. But I will say the latter half definitely feels like a more traditional horror movie from this era. Like, once again, like Insidious came out a year before this. And like the third act of this feels very much like Insidious. You got like the entity, you got like the alternate reality, you got like the kids and all that stuff. And I was just like, okay, I feel like I saw this third act a year ago, you know, well, now, you know, like a decade, now like 15 years ago. But at the time, it was definitely like, it kind of became tropey for a couple of years, probably mostly with the Insidious movies and then some of the Paranormal Activity, like Ghost Dimension type shit. But yeah, that third act was a little rough, I would say.
Like, are we all in agreement? I'm assuming like everyone is like pro lawnmower snuff film here. Like, is that like everyone's favorite snuff film in the movie, or
no not for me. I think, well, first of all, I think the tree is very effective.
Yeah,
but for me, weirdly enough, I thought the pool kill was very interesting.
100%.
Me too.
And the reason why is, conceptually, I can think of like, okay, we need to have like these like fun titles for all of these, you know, these snuff films. And essentially I was like, there are so many other ways that they could have went with a pool kill that is like far less interesting. And the fact that like this one was just like, you know, people basically duct taped or tied to like these, you know, pool recliners and then like slowly pulled in one by one into the pool was just so messed up that I was like, this is like, it feels like it's from a twisted mind. So where that kind of adds this level where it feels like it's an actual snuff film that you're watching. And like, you know, I mentioned in recent memory, like the Poughkeepsie Tapes as well has aspects of that, where this was like, it was super effective. It kind of like made my stomach turn as I was watching it. And also I thought the music in that one in particular was very effective as well. There were some other ones where I thought it was a little overbearing, but this one in particular I just thought really worked for me.
See, I thought the pool one was lacking a bit in the kind of like mystical pool area. Like, it needed to be on a haunted spring
with no bottom, and you know, you just swim down into the depths. And yeah,
for all of our night swim, you drop a rock in there and it just keeps going forever.
For all of our night swim fans out there, you know, the dozen or so of you, you'll love this reference. Yeah,
I mean, I don't know. I'm just a classic lawnmower guy. Even this watch, where I've seen this before, I know what's gonna happen. It gets me every fucking time. Because it's the beat. They do it like on an off beat where it's just a little too long, and I'm like,
it gets your chest tight.
Yeah, and
it's so scary.
And I'm like waiting for it, and it's still not coming, and then it hits. I'm like, ah, fuck, every time.
Yeah, that one hurt. For me, I really like the pool one, but also the barbecue one in the car. You know, just like when the flame hits, it's really cool. And also you see the car like rocking back and forth, so like the people inside are like struggling and they're on fire and they're like slowly dying. That is so terrifying. I don't know if this counts as a snuff film. I guess it is because it's the very, very last one, like at the very end of the movie, like the one that, you know, the little girl Ashley is in. That was really powerful for me when she's like, don't worry, daddy, I'll make you famous again. And then, you know, she like slaughters him and makes a huge mess all over the house. That was crazy to me. I thought that was super powerful.
The only upsetting thing about that is that, as we've already discussed, snuff films aren't very popular. So he wouldn't get too famous off this, you know, at least not off the film, you know.
Right. So. But it's like that, you know, kick when while another he's down person from his writes own a book daughter. About
him.
Ooh, yeah. There we go. All right. Now I get it.
No, I was going to say this would be about podcasts and 2024 true crime podcast, but anyway, go ahead.
Oh,
sorry.
No.
Oh, sorry.
The horror is through the audio. We can hear, you know, Jill's home heating system in the background.
Again.
Yeah, I'm sorry. But other than that, that kill was also really cool because earlier in the movie, you have this connection with the daughter where she wants to help make his coffee with a French press, and then she brings it to him, and he kind of like slams the door in her face and, you know, answers his phone, and she's just left there. And at the very end, like before she kills him, she drugs his coffee because he's like foaming at the mouth and goes unconscious. And it says on the mug or on a letter, sorry, next to it, good night, daddy. And that goes with like all of the themes of the kids who are, you know, killing and then putting these like titles on it. So when the final roll came up, I was expecting it to say the film roll. I was expecting it to say good night, daddy. And I couldn't see it. I had to like pause and like rewind and pause and look at it. And you guys, like my fucking face when I read that last film roll, house painting. God damn, it was so good.
Yeah, that was really good. Yeah.
So fucking cunty, and like the rules about painting on the walls, and then she just paints the walls with his blood. Oh my God. I was shook. So good.
The only thing I would have liked to see with that, when she's killing him, I would have liked to seen it from the perspective of the snuff film, like we see the rest of them, because that one we actually see, you know, outside of the snuff film. We see it like happening in that reality where, to me, I just thought it would have been cooler if we were seeing this and maybe like almost, you know, this might help with Colton, like totally skip that ending of Bagul taking her into the screen, but like maybe seeing it from the perspective of like someone else finding the box.
Yeah.
And then they watch the tape of like what happened to him.
That would have been a better ending.
I would have just went with like a reality blurring ending where essentially you're just watching the film as if it's another film. They cut to just the films at times in this.
Yeah.
You just cut to it and then you're kind of watching. You're like, wait, is that Ethan Hawke? Oh, is that so and so? And you can tell like, okay, we're watching the film, and for a moment we're thinking like, oh, he's just lost his mind, because there's a couple of moments like that in the movie, like, you know, videos on the laptop or whatnot. So I was kind of like, I think it would have been more effective as well, like if we saw it all from the perspective of the snuff film, then right at the end, like where she poses like all the other kids, that would have been a little bit more effective to me. I, you know, obviously, I guess for that general audience, you need to show right away that the kid is making the film. Or maybe you just need the note that Jill really likes of like, you know, like, I'm going to make you famous, daddy, type of line. But yeah, I think it would have been a little bit more effective than me as like a Super 8 film.
I mean, he should have saw it coming, because I knew when the movie started and I saw the girl, I'm like, that girl's evil.
That girl's creepy as fuck.
She's just creepy and looks evil.
You guys just hate gingers.
So does the son, though. The son, I thought it could be him, because you remember that night where he has like the night terrors and he's like in the box and the his face is like shell shocked. Yeah. He looks like he's going to crawl like backwards on all fours. Mm-hmm. And I was waiting for that to happen. I was about to shit my fucking pants.
Yeah.
And then like later on when his face is like in the bushes, when he's out there with his baseball bat, that kid is also really scary.
I mean, he just has night terrors. Like, are we being ableist on this podcast? Or like,
no. You know, no,
not
stop
we,
it.
Just Jill.
If you're having night terrors and you're coming out of fucking cardboard boxes, like, you know, a contort, like you're the creepy. Exorcist scene coming down the stairs, like, we're allowed to say something about you.
That's creepy. I don't care.
That scene was creepy.
Wow. I used to have night terrors, everybody, and look, just coming out.
Is that what you did?
I'm sorry. Well, if you did that, like, shit, I think you'd be creepy.
I think I, like, would just get really scared, like really vivid nightmares as a kid or something. Yeah. And they said, oh, it's night terrors. I didn't do that. I didn't like, you know, spider crawl up the stairs or something. Yeah, as far as I know, at least, you know.
Yeah, you're fine.
I know watching this, I was very excited to, you know, get on doing this because I'm curious, Jill, what is up with snuff films in Pennsylvania? Resident of Pennsylvania, it seems that they really enjoy this stuff. Or the movie's telling me so.
I gotta say, first of all, you can say it's Pennsylvania, but King County is a fictional county. I looked it up. Doesn't exist. Secondly,
Jill's just crossing her T's and dotting her I's.
Right? Secondly, we don't have scorpions to, like, the best of my knowledge. So the fact that there's a scorpion in this guy's attic and then he's just like, oh, yeah, there's a scorpion and now a snake. I ain't seen a snake like that here either. Only
it's
like
a coral snake, too, aren't
yeah,
they? Like,
I'm
in the water and stuff? Like, that's
bullshit.
A like, highly poisonous snake. Yeah.
And they're not even worried about the scorpion and the snake in their house, like, at all.
Bagul took it from his netherworld along with these tapes for to scare Ethan Hawke in his attic.
I just like the cop, like, he told the cop about the scorpion, and the cop just didn't, he was like, all right, cool, yeah. Scorpion.
He's got legs.
Scorpion's in your attic in Pennsylvania, seems normal.
And that's why he got put in his contacts as deputy so-and-so.
I will say, we always rag on, like, you know, the funny or the stupid cop or something in these movies. I didn't find him, like, that offensively bad in this. Like,
I liked him.
I thought he was endearing and he was funny. He was, like, annoying, but, like, not so annoying that I was like, get this guy off the screen.
Not me either with notes about how pathetic he is.
Okay. He is pathetic. He's not as bad as the cops in Malignant or Dead Silence that we've reviewed recently, but he is still pretty bad. And also, for me, it's just like Ethan Hawke could have discovered some of this in other ways throughout the movie, realistically. Like, you know, he could have just did a little bit more digging or, you know, talk to some people himself and whatnot, and eventually got, like, the information he needed. I don't know if we needed, like, these big expository scenes where essentially, like, so-and-so comes back and he goes, hey, I got you all of this information that you need for your book and all this evidence, and I can see these murders are connected, and, you know, just, like, going on and on. I'm like, bro, all right, get out of here. Let the movie, like, tell me this.
They were building that structure for that bang phone call at the end that's supposed to be like the twist punch, right? The call is coming from inside the house moment.
Can I just say that I really found the cops refreshing in this one because in the beginning, immediately when the cop's there in front of this house that you know is going to be like haunted or whatever, you're like, oh, he's going to tell him to leave because it's dangerous. So I was like, this is going to be so cheesy. I'm so sick of all these police on every horror movie we watch, and they're so annoying. So I expected it to be that. But when he was like, yeah, I don't give a fuck about your autograph, and I'm just telling you to leave so you don't fuck with our town sort of thing, I was like, all right, okay, I like the storyline. Like, you know, it makes sense. You're entering, like, this town where people died, and you're going to come and be, like, you know, this writer guy and fuck shit up with the way that he talks about people in his books and stuff. So I liked how the cop served as, like, this sort of liaison to the family and the town. And then, I don't know, I just thought they worked.
To me, once again, even, like, that scene, like, that kind of, all of that stuff just feels like exposition to me. That, obviously, we don't need this movie to be 2.5 hours long. Not everything needs to be really nuanced. It was just, like, once again, he's like, oh, you moved into the old murder house. Like, he's not that explicit about it, but I just feel like whenever the cops show up in this movie, it's just literally, like, to reveal details about, like, the murders. And it's like, they have to kind of have that in with, like, Deputy So-and-so helping him in order for him to consistently come and, like, give him pieces of information to kind of, like, add and pull things together. And it's just, it's constantly, to me, it just feels a little forced, that's all. The one beat I will say with, like, the police in this movie, and, like, I don't just hate the police in this movie, they're fine, they're not as bad as the last couple we did. But when they're leaving town, I like that this movie is smart enough to actually say, like, we're gonna leave this creepy house, screw this, we've had enough. And when the cop pulls them over, I was like, It's going to be like the stupid thing. They can't leave for now, or like, oh, why don't you stay here another night or something stupid. And he's like, all right, get out of here then. And I did enjoy that beat. And I thought it was refreshing because I didn't remember that like the family actually leaves the house, you know, partially probably thinking it's just the house. So I was like, oh, this is a good little beat. I like that.
But it's also pointless.
Why the fuck they left their house in the first place? Because
it doesn't matter if they leave their house because the demon comes with them.
Their old house is fucking baller. It's just a mansion. And they're like, yeah. I was like, what are you doing, man? Just Airbnb that spot. Just, you know, go yourself and hang out in the murder house. I was going to say, like Jill said, I actually did like the cop beats of, you know, because I guess I kind of related it to, you know, I don't know if they predicted it in like 2012, but I just thought it was kind of interesting because it's kind of relevant, you know, like true crime documentaries and stuff are such a big thing now. I almost could have used more of it of like how this guy like affects the town. I mean, that's probably a whole different like drama movie or something, but I thought it was an interesting thing about like how it'd be pretty easy to make this guy like just kind of clueless writer hero in a haunted house story. But it's like, no, like this guy actually, like, even though he, you know, claims he's doing this for good and maybe in some cases is, like, it's still like has effects on these towns and the victims and the family of the victims. And obviously, you know, that's where the negative energy comes from.
The whole thing is like this giant moral dilemma about, like, you know, the integrity of making true crime entertainment, which I think is a really interesting theme that is weaved throughout the whole movie. Like, he's struggling with his own morals when he watches like old interviews of himself when he first started, and he was like, I'm doing this for the justice, but now he's just obviously doing it for the money and all that. So the fame and the money, he doesn't care about the justice anymore. So that was a really interesting contrast. And then you see the effects of it on his family, and he still can't rise above that. Like, his marriage, his kids are being affected by it. And I think it's, you know, it's interesting because, like, humans tend to be curious about, like, death and the macabre, especially if it's a true story. And I kind of, like, have some experience with this. Like, my hometown, there's, like, always people missing or, like, murdered or whatever. And, like, I know the people that this happened to, and, like, some of their stories have, like, turned into, like, you know, podcast material for true crime podcasts. And it's interesting to see the effects of that also in this town. And, like, you know, these are real people. And it's hard because he says, you know, they deserve to have their stories told, but he's still profiting off of it, and it seems wrong. But and then it's really wrong at the end because he's just doing it for his own gain.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting.
I've mentioned like exposition a couple of times. What I'll say is there's one scene near the beginning of the movie that I really did actually like the exposition in. It's the scene with him and his wife in the bedroom that's kind of just locked off, shot from one angle, where he kind of comes in and kind of checks on her, sees what's wrong, and she, you know, hates that they're there, and like they kind of talk to her, or he talks to her about his insecurities, about how he needs her as like a pillar, you know, in order to do this and whatnot. And then there's this one line from her where, you know, she says like, Kentucky blood was 10 years ago. Like, what if that was just your 15 minutes? And I love that line because it's like, it's so scathing, but also like you can just see it in like Ethan Hawke's performance that he's like, damn, like, you know, you just like expose me. Like, I've been having these thoughts for the past, you know, 6 or 7 years probably. And he kind of brings that to the surface. So there's lots of beats in this movie with his character in particular that I think are neat little details that a lot of lesser horror movies wouldn't do, or maybe lesser is the wrong word, but there's just, there's beats that I haven't really seen before. Like, I like the beat where after he sees the second snuff film and he's like, okay, this is like a box full of snuff films, he actually does actively take, like, basically what all of us would do, or like most of us would do. It's like, God, I don't want to deal with this. I gotta just give this shit to the police. Like, let's get rid of this. Like, does the right thing or whatever. And I like that he actually makes the phone call. You know, that's what he's doing. And then once again, he sees his books and he's like, never mind. And, you know, that beat might be a little bit on the nose, but I liked it just because, once again, there's so many horror movies we watch where it's like, why don't they get the cops involved? There's people getting murdered in your house. Or why don't they leave the house? You know, it's clearly haunted. But this movie does kind of take the other steps to at least, you know, almost go there, right? He doesn't go to the police station with the tapes or anything, but, you know, he almost gets there, and I appreciated it. There's a lot of little beats like that with Ethan Hawke's character in this.
Yeah, I kind of wish they had more interaction between, like, Ethan Hawke and Juliet Rylance, because I really liked her in this, and I thought their dynamic was really interesting. And unfortunately, you know, we talked about how, you know, we get all this snuff film stuff, but then obviously this does switch into, like, a more traditional, like, ghouls and ghosts. And, like,
yeah,
the family's, like, pretty much gone. It, like, any of these spooky incidents isn't happening to anyone else but him. Like, you know, we get, like, little peeks with the daughter and stuff. But like I said, I already knew she was evil by just looking at her. But, like, I would have liked to seen this be causing more issues with the son and the wife and how they interact with that. Just because I think it would have brought, like, more drama and, like, it would have been scarier because it's happening to, like, this whole family. Whereas, like, they kind of just disappear for large chunks of time, and then next thing we know, you know, they're on the floor and the daughter's getting ready to kill them, and we're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, they flirt with a lot of that throughout the movie. Like, I think she gets really upset about him drawing, like, the tree with the kids, you know, the family hanging from it, yeah, at school, and kind of freaking out about, like, everywhere we go, does this have to be the first thing our kids are exposed to? And they have a pretty, like, violent argument over that. But I think after that, it does largely just kind of take a backseat to the Bagul mythology and Bagul of it all, which, you know, I like aspects of. But I actually really liked, you know, the family drama as well. And that's why I think a smaller film, more insular, about, you know, a writer just watching these snuff films and getting progressively more messed up by it all, and how it affects his family and all that stuff, could be interesting as well, with a sprinkling of paranormal. You don't have to go whole ham into it like this movie does. And, you know,
you didn't like, but when they were like, if you want to know about this, you have to call the Cane of Hell's Kitchen to find out, yeah, all your, well, info.
When we were talking about authority figures, I was like, I should just pivot right to the occult crime expert, Vincent D'Onofrio. Yeah. And I was just like, oh, bro, I'm so tired of the demonologist trope coming in for the third act. I'm so tired of it.
The only Vincent D'Onofrio performance, I'm going to say, in his whole canon that is done through a, you know, what was it? It wasn't Zoom back
webcam,
then.
Webcam, essentially, yeah. Skype, yeah, or like something,
a,
yeah.
Not FaceTime? Even Skype, it was, like, yeah. Yeah. Fuck, like, Jesus Christ. He was seriously like, yeah, I'm literally going to phone this in from my spare room. You got...
Good for
seven
him,
hours.
Man. Good for him.
Yeah. Literally phone it in.
Yeah, I think like the second one just ends really awkwardly as well. I can't remember how the call ends, but it's like, you're looking into this too deep or something. He's just like, yeah, I gotta go or something. Like, it's, yeah, it's very strange. Yeah. But I was like, yeah, Vincent D'Onofrio had like 1 hour to record this earlier today. So he's just like, ah, oh, yeah, all right, I'll do it.
I was going to say another thing I really liked. I think you briefly brought it up. I think it was the second snuff film, the one with where like the
that's
kids.
The barbecue, I think.
All right, car, so maybe, yeah, it's the third. The one where, like, they've got everyone tied in bed and they're, like, slitting their throats.
Yeah. Oh, my that's least favorite one. Yeah. All right.
So, well, this wasn't my favorite snuff film, but I did like how, you know, with all these snuff films, like, they never, like, show too much, but how, like, we get
to
watch.
We should just do an episode, you know, ranking
the
our snuff favorite
films.
Snuff films.
I like, yeah, this.
Fuck
I like
that,
this,
bro. Never say that again. Jesus.
No, but I mean, I
oh, my God. New letterbox list.
Here we go.
I like the shot where, like, we see all the throats get slit through Ellison's glasses. Like, we don't actually, yes, watch, yeah, it, which I thought, mm-hmm, was, like, pretty cool because, like, you know, there's lots of, like, blood splattered on the wall, stuff like that. But, like, this isn't overly, like, a blood and guts movie. Yeah, yeah, it's not a gratuitous movie.
Especially the kid one where it's, like, they give you just enough to make you think that the movie might go there. Like, we might see the reflection, yeah, still in his glasses. But I like even Ellison, like, he's not that desensitized to it at that point. Like, you know, he has to turn away from it. And they blur it all out in the background, you know, which, yeah, is, it's nice. I'm glad that we didn't go there as well.
I just had a note that said, I just feel like I want to be friends with Ethan Hawke, just in general. I think.
What about this character made you want to be friends with him? Just well, kick no, that, just in general. Have a drink.
I'm all for...
just wants Ethan Hawke. He's like divorcing him from this character.
Yeah, I'm like Ethan Hawke in the sweaters. I'm all for it.
The cardigans.
Oh, listen, my 18 notes about how I want his fucking wardrobe.
It's giving secret it's... window.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ew. Ugh.
I'm sorry.
Well,
but
yeah, what he's wearing is, it's also giving C. Robert Cargill, I believe, who's one of the like writers of this movie. Like he had a fairly big Twitter presence there a couple of years ago. So like I follow him and he's a screenwriter and whatnot. Right. So he just gives a lot of advice and he's on a lot of podcasts and whatnot. So I've seen kind of his look at times as well. And like the way he's dressed kind of feels a little bit like Ethan Hawke in this movie. And, you know, I'm not familiar enough with Scott Derrickson to know if that's, you know, maybe his aesthetic as well. But yeah, stylish in this movie. I've heard Ethan Hawke, you know, from a few people I've worked with that have worked with him, is very eccentric, like a very weird guy.
I would believe that.
I can see that.
Yeah, I would believe that. I was going to say, you brought it up pretty early, Colton, but I just wanted to say again, I thought the score was like super fantastic in this film. I thought it worked pretty well. I do like how they mixed a lot of like the score in with like the projector sounds and
like ambient music, yeah, and noises, like, yeah.
And I think it's kind of funny because, you know, we talked about, you know, other movies we reviewed with Snuff, Thesis, which I think we also had a conversation of just about like, you know, the sounds of old technology and the tactileness of it. But yeah, the clicks and the whatever, like there's just something
the,
so
like little editing.
Yeah, it's just something just so aesthetically nice to the ear.
Oh yeah, I agree. I thought the score pretty much all around was great. From what I read, it's like has like black metal aspects to it, or like
which
Norwegian,
would make sense, yeah.
Yeah, like stuff to it, which obviously Bagul gets a bit of his inspiration from that as well. So,
oh, hold up. Not actually black metal, but from Slipknot's Mick Thompson. I read that they actually got the like idea for Bagul's like makeup, I guess, from his mask. So if you look it up, Mick Thompson Slipknot mask, it's
pretty
much the same thing.
When I was reading it up, it said they got it from, I think it was like a ghoul on Pinterest titled Natalie. And if you just look at it, it was just a ghoul.
Not fucking Pinterest. Oh my god. I would never.
I think it was Pinterest,
You would have to. You would have. If I was a producer or like a whatever designer on this movie, you would have to fucking waterboard that information out of me. Like, no way.
I thought they said Pinterest and they had like hundreds of pins of like possible looks and like, you know, vibe and whatnot. I could be wrong. Maybe it was something a little bit more elevated.
Also, but I don't know who you guys are talking about because I thought the villain in this was named Mr. Boogie.
I think it's time. We should get into Bagul. What do we think of Bagul?
I don't hate him. I don't hate him.
I want Slipknot to get royalties.
I can't stand Bagul. And the reason why, his Same. Vibe, his look, it's bad, first of all, or it's off. But second of all, like when I saw this movie, I was like, Bagul is kind of just like a ripoff of Slenderman. Like almost like wholeheartedly as well, which... Like Marble Hornet, Slenderman, like he came out in like 2009. So like Slenderman was kind of like not in the zeitgeist fully yet. But like I, for example, was watching Slenderman videos in 2010 for sure. Like experiencing Marble
100%.
Hornet, you know, analog horror, you know, every couple of weeks on YouTube. So I was just watching this. I was like, it's a dude in kind of like a suit or at least like a black, you know, outfit with a bright white face. Who's always, for most of the movie, in these, like, old analog videos where you can't really see him and he looks at the camera and stuff. It's very Slenderman-esque. And then Slenderman's whole thing is stealing children and bringing them away to, like, his palace. Where it's
I don't know anything about Slenderman, so I guess that's why I wouldn't connect them.
Dude, you watch Marble Hornets, it does some of this. I'm not going to say all of it. It's a mess as well. But it does like the horror of kind of like this entity, like in the analog, like in my opinion, better than this. Specifically also because I think a lot of like the rendering of Bagul in this looks pretty bad at times, which I don't know. Maybe we can just get into it right now. But it was
what
the sort
it
of
all
thing.
Does, yeah.
Yeah. When I was here just watching this movie, I couldn't divorce it from like the old Slenderman like viral videos. And I went and I looked at the Wikipedia and I was like, they gotta mention Slenderman. I mean, it's like, it's so blatant in this movie. And then from what I heard, like the sequel is all about Bagul and the children and whatnot. I'm like, They just make like another Slenderman fan film or something. So I looked it up. Not one. Nowhere do they mention Slenderman. I'm like, bro, this was definitely an influence. There's too many parallels to like what they were doing with Marble Hornets and stuff. Maybe because like Marble Hornets was probably still ongoing, or like, you know, it was just kind of, you know, cropping up every now and then when Sinister came out, that they didn't want to necessarily say like they drew some inspiration from it. But I just thought it was so blatant when I was watching this. And I guess I'm the only person that watched Marble Hornets, really.
Yeah. But. Yeah. I mean, I still agree with you. With Bagul, that, like, you know, do I think they could have cut out most of the Bagul stuff? Like, probably. I probably would have liked to see him stay just kind of in the snuff films almost, and have that kind of, like, you know, VHS quality vibe to him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's bad at a couple of points in this movie. So I said before we started recording, I was going to go back to the original scene and watch it and see if Bagul was in it. And unless he's very, you know, fuzzy. I watched it in like a 4K rip here, just watching it right before we recorded. And he was not in that opening scene. Which means that it also feels like a bit of a cheat to me. And, like, of course, you can go, like, okay, well, Bagul's not in the tapes until Ethan Hawke starts seeing Bagul and or whatever. Like, sure, you can make that excuse. But it's, like, on a rewatch, I should be seeing Bagul in all these tapes as we're watching them. Because he's supposed to be there. He's supposed to be present in what's happening. And it was just kind of a cheat to me that I didn't like. And I was also like, I bet there's a version of this where Bagul actually is present in this. But it's just like the CGI rendering of Bagul is so terrible, like in these scenes, that it's just like they couldn't put him in the opening scene because people would instantly be like, what's that goofy guy like back there standing in the bushes or whatever? I just thought every single time he showed up in like a video or he had to move, it felt like watching like a hand-drawn animated movie where it was like you can just tell something was off. It wasn't lit properly. It kind of stood out strange. Like, you know, I could just definitely tell with a lot of these that he just wasn't part of the scene and he was added in post. Maybe it was like, maybe he wasn't included as much, but he definitely was like throughout. So I have no idea why he looked so bad. Specifically the MacBook head turn moment where they somehow crop the image to like 4K and he like turns his head. Oh god, I was just like, that is the point of the movie, by the way, where my notes go from like, this is awesome, this is crazy, to like, oh no. Like he's right at that scene. From there on out, I have like more complaints than I have than good to say about the movie.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna lie though, at the end I did jump when he popped in.
Oh my god, it was so scary.
Yeah,
I screamed.
You know, they only had to do that scare 20 minutes before that and then they do it again.
Wow. I forgot and I was like, oh yeah, I was like, and it was one of those ones like I'm mad at them for doing it. I'm like, oh, that's cheap. But then I'm like, oh yeah, you got me, that's a good one.
Well, they do how we all thought Innkeepers was going to end, where they're like, oh, they're obviously gonna, you know, have the cheap jump scare at the end with a ghost or something, because they reference it earlier in the movie. No, this movie just fully goes like weird guy, CGI guy, or maybe it's a real guy, but it looks terrible when he pops at the screen like that.
I wonder if Ellison brings some of this stuff on to himself, though, because I was thinking when I was watching this, you know what I'm not doing? I'm not going in that fucking attic in the middle of the night with no light up there. A, you just killed a scorpion up there and like snakes and shit. So I'm not.
All you have is your iPhone 8.
Yeah, your iPhone, and like, just what an idiot. I'm like, yeah, because that's what I want. I want to get stung by another scorpion while I'm just crawling in the dark in this fucking attic. There's nothing up there, man. Just leave it alone. Just, yeah, stupid. Stop exploring attics at night. Don't
but
do
what
it.
What about like if there was a bunch of weird children in your attic? All up there. Bagul again. What if that happens? And then you go down the ladder and all your shit starts falling out of the attic through the hole you fell through. What if that happens?
I thought you were saying that's what Ellison would say. He'd go up, see him, and go, Bagul again. Again with the children.
I mean, the way the third act of this movie gets, I mean, it wouldn't be too out of sorts if he just went, Bagul.
I like that every time you mention his name, Colton, you go, Bagul.
That's how you gotta say it, Bagul. It's just such a
They need
goofy...
to do an origin story called Bagul Beginnings.
They probably don't say that. They'll do it.
They could have called this villain anything. And I think Mr. Boogie is a better name than Bagul. Yeah. Bagul just is, like, so goofy. And then you see, like, the name with this guy who's, like, Slender Man with long hair and, like, maybe worse wardrobe. It's just like, bro, Bagul is not scary. Like, I like conceptually Bagul, like, as an entity, like, who's living in kind of the images and the media that Ethan Hawke's consuming. And then we're consuming the media as well. So then, oh, obviously we're all going to go home. Bagul's going to scare us. Like, you know, I like that conceptually. I just think it would have worked better if Bagul stayed as part of the found footage the entire time. Or, like, if he lived in the digital space and it was a little bit more subdued. I just think when he becomes, like, literally, like, just a monster popping up and literally looking at the camera to scare the audience. Like, I'm not talking about in the found footage. That's fine because he could be looking at, like, whoever's recording. But when he's, like, looking at the camera of the movie Sinister to scare us, it's like, you've lost the plot. Like, what is this guy? Like, he's just goofy.
That's when they lost it.
So I have a question. Would you, I don't know, are you watching snuff films? Like, I was thinking, I was like, you know, you find a bunch of snuff films. Are you watching them? I feel like lots of kids are all, you know, they're like, hey, want to go online and see some guy get beheaded or something? I was going to
say, do you not remember the early days of the internet when there was all sorts of viral videos that was supposedly snuff films? And
so I've seen some of what people would consider snuff films purely from what you're saying, like the early days of the internet, like, you know, the ISIS beheading video or, you know, Chainsaw Cartel or something. I personally, I haven't seen those.
Stuff's gone wrong. Yeah.
I heard enough people talk about them that I know that there's lots of people around my age consuming them. For whatever reason, maybe just having a semi-decent head on my shoulders, I didn't look into that too deeply. I wasn't watching any of that. If I found a bunch of tapes in my attic, well, I don't have a VHS anymore, so I'd have to, like, hit up Rowan, but VHS, a VCR player, whatever.
And I'd definitely be like, yeah, sure, I'll watch them.
Guys, I'm fucked up. I did it.
You watched these snuff films and whatnot?
No, I mean, okay, one time.
You produced, like, snuff films?
No, is it snuff if it's a suicide?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there was a video. Back in the day, like 2013, like 10 years ago, I think there was this girl, she hung herself and she taped it. And it was like going around the internet. My sister showed me and I was just so curious. I just watched the whole thing.
I'm not laughing about that. I was just laughing at the disappointment in Colton's voice when he's like, yeah, that's still snuff.
It's real life footage of someone dying. Yeah, I would say it probably counts as a snuff film. I like, once again, I've seen them, like, from time to time, but it's never been something that I've ever, like, looked out. Like, you know, lots of times I'm on Reddit and, you know, sometimes there'll be one that pops up or, like, a horrific war crime or something. I'm like, oh, shit, that's gnarly. But, like, I've never had a period in my life where I seek it out. But getting back to the original question, like, yeah, if I found these sorts of tapes, it'd have to be tapes. I mean, I can't get the whole, you know, 8mm projector up and running.
They're 4Ks.
They're 4Ks. Okay. I mean, if I found them in my attic, I'd be curious to watch one. If I watched one and was like, bro, this is murder, maybe you put on a second one just in case, make sure you didn't pull the bad disc, just like quickly. And then you go like, then you got to, like, throw them, you know, turn them into the cops or something, you know. I would be a little bit better than Ethan Hawke. Maybe I would take some inspiration, once again, you know, the writerly thing, but I wouldn't be sitting there going through all these snuff films. It's like a bridge too far for me. I like horror and whatnot, but it's just, it takes the fun out of, like, seeing, like, weird gory effects and, you know, all that stuff when it's, like, actually real shit that you're watching. In my opinion, it's just not for me. I also had someone when I was a kid, I was probably like 14 or 15. He was one guy who, like, he spent a lot of time on Live Leak. And I remember one time I was, like, in his room as he was watching some sort of, it was like a shotgun suicide video. And I remember it was like his friends after the guy committed suicide came in, like, and was all on tape, like, and was, like, picking at the guy's, like, brains and his insides and whatnot. And it's really weird. I didn't see it, but the guy was, like, reacting to it about, like, how wild it is. And he's like, Colin, you gotta watch this. You gotta watch it. I'm like, I'm not watching that shit. Anyways, the guy wound up in, like, intensive therapy later that year for probably all the shit he was watching.
Didn't that happen in Lords of Chaos?
Yeah. They're
shotgun suicide with all of his friends around. Like, that
band, they're
Mayhem.
The cover of their album, would they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Took the picture of their friend that committed suicide.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
And then they, like, took parts of his, was it, like, bones or something, and they, like, they wore it or something. I don't know. Anyway.
Oh my God. All right. I didn't know that detail, but yeah, that's really good. A couple of bridges way too far for me. We haven't talked about the raccoon-eyed children, which I understand they are involved with Bagul, and we've dunked on Bagul enough. But like, once again, I can stomach Bagul to some degree. I can't stomach these shoddily makeup, gaunt, pale children running around in kind of slow motion at times and appearing by people's beds and whatnot. Like, did you guys find that scary at all compared to what we watched?
No, I actually thought it was ridiculous.
Okay,
when the
thank
girl
you.
Appears like really close to his face and her face is like really big, that was really scary to me. It got me.
Okay, that's the first one, I guess. But then, you know, probably 5 minutes later, they're, you know, doing interpretive dance throughout his home as he's like looking around. And I'm just like, oh, this is so funny because I'm just thinking like the logistics of the scene of like, all right, Ethan Hawke, you got this pale kid stood next to you. You know, you can't look at him even slightly, you know, when you're walking past him and all this stuff. And like, once again, they're doing all these dance movements and really slow and then kind of speeding up and all herky jerky. And I'm like, this is just over the top. What it culminates in is like, you know, the bedroom scare with like the daughter. And she's like kind of paralyzed next to her bed and sees, you know, the little girl next to her, like painting on the walls or whatever. I thought that was like a cute little moment. But once again, that sort of moment would work better for me if like, once again, we saw these kids sparingly. Like,
yeah.
The third act of this movie is all Bagul.
All
like raccoon
around, yeah.
Black-eyed children, which is just like, bro, I was signing up to a true crime snuff film that is messed up for the first hour of this movie. And it goes so far off the rails by the end that I was just like, I thought I was watching like Insidious 7. Like, it was just, it was so...
Slumhouse.
Yeah, I know, but it was just so off the rails. So yes, I have to dunk on the black, you know, black-eyed children or raccoon-eyed children or whatever they are. They got me drove.
All I can imagine in that rant is as you said, someone having to explain the Ethan Hawke, but doing it in a hard Newfoundland accent. And that's all I could think about and how... awesome that would be the witness. But yeah, no, I agree. I did think it went a little too long. I did like the little girl in the girl's room. I didn't mind the little girl that was like following him at first, because I thought, you know, I was like, okay, I get it, because there's lots of times, you know, when you have that feeling like someone's behind you or someone's watching you, and then, you know, you turn and they're not there. But I did think it was way too extended. Like, I didn't need the boy kid coming and like, I was like, I got it after like the first one or two times.
Do you like how explicit in the ending as well? It's like, now we got to watch the extended cuts where it like shows all the kids being part of the murder as well. I feel like Jill does. But like, do you like that all these murders were perpetrated by like the kids in the family? Like, is that a neat beat for you guys? Like, for me, I did like it. Okay.
I'll say I didn't like it because I literally 10 minutes into the movie was like, the kid did it. And then there was another one. I was like, okay, if it wasn't the same kid, a kid did it. And I just spent the whole movie waiting for that, like, punchline.
So then when
they were like, the extended cut, and I'm like, oh, whoa, here's what I've been waiting for the whole fucking movie. And it was just, I don't know, it was like, just not enough at that point.
In the
Too much and not
time,
enough.
The Sleepy Time snuff film, they have that, like, little chihuahua who's like... kind like he's upset, you know, because his owners are dying, but he was like also not killing the person who was doing it. And I was like, why isn't that dog like doing anything? And I was
stupid.
Watching it with my friend, and he goes, well, later on you'll see why. And I was like, okay. Oh. And then afterwards I was like, oh, because it was the kid.
Wait, I thought you said you watched this by yourself.
I watched it part of it yesterday when I had friends over.
Not the multi-part viewing again, Jill.
And stop. And then they left like halfway through, so I turned it off. And then today I rewatched it from the beginning. So I watched the first half of it again so I could really understand
it. I'll allow it.
Yeah. Oh my God. Leave me alone.
All right, well, let's land the plane and get to rating this. If you're new to the show, our rating system is nay, okay, yay, or slay. Colton, what would you rate 2012's Sinister?
I think it's sacrilegious to give a movie that is like this technically good, and like his rendition of like Super 8 film and like some of the VHS recordings and even some of the Screen Life stuff before Bagul comes in, like only an okay. So I'm gonna give it a light yay. I think conceptually a lot of it works better than where it goes. Like, once again, I just wanted a more restrained version of this without the children and without Bagul being so apparent. I would have liked it to be a little bit more insular about Ethan Hawke losing his mind and snuff films and whatnot. And maybe that movie exists and I just haven't seen it yet. Or maybe someone I know will make that movie at some point. I think it would be a little bit more my speed. But for what it does a lot competently. I like that the characters are a little bit smarter than your average horror characters. I like, obviously, all the rendition of the snuff film, but I also think like a lot of like the camera and stuff is interesting. I don't think it always works. Sometimes it's a little bit like, why is this shot like a long shot when you're talking to a police officer? Stuff like that. It's just, I think it's well done. I think it's a good horror movie. It's one of those really popular horror movies that I think does have a lot going for it. I just think like a lot of those really popular horror movies in the third act, it kind of just completely falls apart. You know, the more like commercial kind of Blumhouse movies, I just don't think they stick the landing. And this one, the landing is a little bit rougher than most of these sorts of movies. So it definitely takes down a little bit for me. So a very, very gentle yay. Jill, first time watcher, what do you think of it overall?
So even though, you know, the third act is a total mess, like you said, even though there's that, and, you know, you see Gabagool at the end for way too long, and it's kind of cheesy and whatever, and he should have stayed in the screens. Despite all that, I'm going to fucking blindside all of that, not even think about it, because there are parts of this that were really good. The suspense, the atmosphere. I was fucking scared. I jumped. I screamed. I really liked the subplots they had. I loved Ethan Hawke's performance. I think Juliette Rylance did a really good job, and she's not like in horror. She produced, I think, A Dog's Purpose. So I want to see her in more horror. It was a little silly at times, but it was really good. I like the VHS vibe. So I'm going to give it a motherfucking slay, especially for that last scene with like the little girl and the, you know, house painting thing. I thought it was just amazing. What about you, Rowan?
Yeah, so I kind of throughout this whole episode, I was up and down. I thought I knew what I was going to rate it, and we talked about it. And I think I went to like three different ratings on this one. But I'm going with my heart, Jill. I'm giving it a slay also.
Hell yeah.
Oh my brother. God.
I love this movie.
I'm gonna be sick.
Like I said, this movie scared the shit out of me the first time I saw it. I couldn't sleep that night. I don't care. I think it falls apart in the third act, but I think that like first hour is so good, and I'm like, this is how good I want every mainstream, especially Blumhouse release to be. That like, I mean, the lawnmower video alone makes this whole movie a slay. Like, I jump at this movie. I've got to give it the respect. I like it. I can't even describe in words the real reasons I like it, other than I just have a good time with it. I'm going with my heart. So, you know what? It's been a long time since I've done two slays in a row. And I feel like it'll probably go, it's all going downhill from here for me, probably. So, yeah, I'll give it a slay. What about you, Mike?
Uh-oh. Honestly, I'm going to give it an okay. I was waffling back and forth between, like, I'll give it a light yay, and I was like, I honestly can't even do that. Like,
oh my God.
I can't. I have to be true to myself. Yeah. I really wanted to like this movie, and I actually, as we know, this doesn't happen a lot, but, like, me and Colton are pretty much on the same page about almost every aspect of this movie. I echo a lot of his, the things that he kind of, like, latched onto and find interesting, and the things that turned him off also turned me off. The snuff films were scary. I love Ethan Hawke, but the supernatural aspect of it absolutely just turned me off. I don't know why. The vibe just turned absolutely rancid. when that came into the picture, and I just thought that it didn't have any, like, style. Like, I loved the snuff film, like, sequences. The style of those was really well done, especially with the, like, alchemy of, like, the visuals and the weird ambient music and noises and stuff. But all the other uses of, like, kind of camera, you know, footage and stuff for the rest of the movie just looked like absolute garbage. And again, the makeup was trash, the CGI was trash. And I just, and this is the worst part, like, I just saw the twist, like, I literally just assumed that everybody was gonna know that, like, that was gonna come up halfway through the movie. And so I just spent, like, the entire movie going, oh, okay, I just could see all the, like, ways they were, like, all, like, fitting all the pieces together before the call came from inside the house. So it just sort of, like, turned me off. I couldn't really enjoy it because I was just, like, watching them, you know, like, turn the gears to get from point A to point B to point C. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And it just felt like at the end, it just felt like they had a really cool idea for these really horrific, and they were, like, don't get me wrong, a couple of the jump scares got me, and those videos, I'm gonna remember them for the rest of my life. They were so well done, but it just felt like that was their idea, and they were just, like, building the whole movie around those sequences, which sometimes that works. It just didn't work for me. The lack of style just destroyed me. But yeah, so it's an okay. It wasn't the worst movie ever. It was very competently made. I will give it that. It just didn't have enough flourish and flair for me, and it just kind of fell flat. So I'm sorry. It's an okay. I'm sorry to Jill and Roe. I get where you're coming from, but it just, Hater, it didn't scare me. Like,
I feel like Two Slays, a yay and okay, is going to, like, average it out to where it probably should be. Yeah, it evens out,
exactly. Like, the median rating is still pretty good.
So, we told you what we thought about it, and we asked what you thought about it, and we had some people write in, so I'm going to start on Facebook first. Heather D. wrote in. This isn't Heather P., this is Heather D., but I don't want, you know, people searching you like weirdos, so mm-hmm. I'll just say Heather D. They had one simple word. It was just yay. So Sinister, yay. I'm assuming on Colton's level. And then on Instagram, we had Petal Frog right in. They said, ending enraged me so much, but I don't remember why and have no desire to rewatch to see why.
Well, I think you probably learned now why it enraged you.
Yeah.
and then we had Heather Louise McGill write in, and they said, still haven't gotten over that fucking lawnmower scare.
Yeah.
That will stick with you for life, so it we does. Understand yeah. it. Yeah. Brad Dunn wrote in, and he just said, meh.
Brad.
He's like, I can do better.
And then we had the 3-2-1 ghost pod write in and just said, love it, exclamation mark. So this is kind of what I thought. I thought it was going to be
all over the place.
All over the place.
But no one hating it. You know?
No. Yeah, exactly. So with that, I think, this time we got more than one voicemail and we have a question that came in.
Oh, boy.
So,
all right.
I don't know. Where do you guys want to start? Do we want to start voicemails or questions? I think it's funner if we just decide on the fly what we want to do.
Let's do the question. Let's do the question.
Yeah.
So we had, I think it's a question. Maybe more of a statement, but it's referring to our last episode. Okay. Nick wrote in and said, heard mention of the Iron Claw on last episode. Highly recommend checking out Dark Side of the Ring series. I feel like people who aren't wrestling fans will still enjoy, though wrestling fans may likely enjoy it a bit more.
Yeah, so I think the Dark Side of the Ring actually covers some of the subject matter that's in the Iron Claw, so it's been something I've heard of as well, but I do kind of have an aversion just to real life wrestling content. I like the wrestler, you know, Darren Aronofsky, and I like obviously the Iron Claw. But, you know, whenever I get into real life wrestling stuff, it's just not really for me. That being said, I've consistently heard great things about Dark Side of the Ring, so maybe it is something I should check out.
Yeah, so have I. I was going to say a lot of people. Anyone that knows me knows I'm not, like, really into wrestling either, but everyone tells me, like, it's a really great documentary series, and just like super fascinating. So yeah, with that, let's kick it over to the horrific hotline. I don't even know who we have lined up first. So
sounds good. Well, I'll kick it off. I think this message is from Steven, one of our patrons, the guy who picked the medium a couple of weeks ago. So yeah, this is Steven's message.
Hey guys, Steven here. First off, just wanted to say so happy you enjoyed my Patreon pick, The Medium. I really love that film. And I also want to thank you, Jill, for your insightful references from 90 Day Fiancé. Please do not stop referencing that show. You are the queen. Don't listen to anyone else on that podcast.
Aww.
You can reference it as much as you please. A little tidbit I saw just in like a comment on Reddit or YouTube or something, but I thought it was interesting and hopeful in regards to The Medium. Neem, the shaman, her doubt might have been unfounded in regards to her actually being a genuine shaman, because in her place when she dies, the whole place is ransacked by the demon except for her bedroom, and her body is peaceful. So I read that it's likely the goddess is protecting her in her death. Good. And the demon couldn't touch her, which is a little hopeful in an otherwise dismal
I like
story.
That.
So
that's an interesting
I thought that
detail,
was something
yeah.
I'd share.
Yeah.
For Sinister, great choice. I really loved this movie when it came out. It was a part of my horror reawakening because I used to watch a little bit of horror with Colton growing up, but I never saw it myself. But in the 2010s with Insidious and Sinister, kind of started getting back into it. And yeah, the rest is history. But really enjoy this movie. It's a weak yay for me now. I think of it basically
on the same
in
page.
Two parts. There's the like A+ snuff film horror that's just gruesome and unnerving, particularly the lawnmower film.
And then it's
C+ Ethan Hawke horror, like with crappy jump scares. Yeah, like I'm not a big fan of the main story part of the movie, but it's worth the watch for sure. And the opening sequence just grabs you. Like, it is dead silent, just watching this family, not really understanding what's going on until they're starting to go up in the air. It is so eerie and gruesome. I just cannot speak highly enough of that scene, particularly when it's topped off with a little girl climbing down out of the tree. It's just so messed up in all the right ways. So yeah, thanks for doing this episode, and thank you for all your awesome words on the Patreon pick earlier. Cheers.
I mean, thank you for the support, Steven.
And a great pick.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, I know. It was a great pick. It seems like he echoed a lot of sentiments that we've shared with, Sinister. You've probably heard us discuss them at length now. But yeah, I mean, thanks to Steven for picking that pick. And then also thanks for Steven for upping, what his pledge on Patreon is. That's awesome. We haven't had anybody do that yet, I don't think. So
yeah, I believe they call that BDE. Big dick energy.
Oh my god. Well, disgusting.
Steven came in the Patreon just big dick swinging.
Oh my god.
It's called slanging, by the way.
And with that, let's get to another one of our patrons' messages. This is, I assume, Nicholas, because he never misses an episode.
I think overall, Sinister is one of Scott Derrickson's better movies. It starts off with this great, disturbing opening shot. And overall, the Super 8 home movies are really atmospheric, really disturbing. And the first hour or so is, I'd say, mostly a great horror movie. It is very tense, it is scary, and it has this great mystery.
I think I can see where this is going.
However, once it becomes clear that the movie is taking a supernatural turn, the movie falls apart for me. And it's not because it is supernatural, just the way Derrickson or the movie overall deals with the supernatural elements.
Mm-hmm.
So while I think that this Mr. Boogie or Bagul is scary looking, and the ghosts are scary looking as well, they appear too often, too frequently in the last 30 to 40 minutes of the movie, mostly accompanied with what I'd say cheap jump scares just for the sake of having a jump scare. And most of the time, the characters in the movie don't even realize the jump scares just for the audience, which I think is just a cheap trick to make, the audience scared. And it happens too often towards the final act of the movie. I'd still give it a yay for especially the first hour, because it, again, haven't watched it for, I think, since it came out. And I found it really tense and interesting, the storyline. I didn't remember everything. But once the ghosts came into the picture, I was like, yeah, no, I know where this is going. Liked it, but would have wished for a better ending.
Yeah, basically beat for beat what I said. Yeah. So Nicholas is back in my good graces again. You know,
Colton is a man of the people now.
Absolutely. And if you want to leave us a voicemail, you can do so at just emailing us at itslayspodcast@gmail.com, or, you know, sending us a message on any of our socials at itslayspodcast, and just, you know, attach your voice message and we'll make sure that it makes it on the show. And if you're not following us already on our socials, you can do so at itslayspodcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Slasher, Letterboxd, Threads, Blue Sky. If there's a social media, we're probably there at It Slays Podcast. And if you want to support the show, like our horror hounds Holly, Nicholas, Patrick, Mark, Steven, Joy, Carvey, Dan, Brian, and Trevor, gain access to the Patreon exclusive show Stream Screams, hosted by Jill, and get episodes of this here main show 48 hours early. Be sure to head on over to patreon.com/itslayspodcast and choose whatever tier works best for you. Rowan, any of the weird Norwegian tracks making the horrific playlist?
Or
yeah,
Slipknot.
We'll definitely have to add something from the score. Add some mayhem just for that. I thought Nicholas said Mr. Booby.
Oh.
So I was like, oh, he might have been watching a little different film, a sinister tribute,
Skinister.
I guess.
Yeah, I thought when they brought in the extended cuts, it was just going to be like the mid-2000s DVDs, you know, just random topless women in the background.
Unrated and uncut. Never seen before. But yeah, you can go to Spotify, to the It Slays Podcast horrific playlist. If you have any problems finding it, you can go to any of the social media that Colton just mentioned. Go to the Linktree link in the bio. Click on it, take you right there. And we upload scores or licensed music from iconic horror movies or horror movies we review or just horror movies we love. So, go follow the playlist. We're always updating it, and get your spooky music on, because why the hell not? And from there, this is the time of year where we announce what the next movie is. And guess what? We always say we don't know, because you guys are going to be voting for it. I believe like voting will already be going on by the time this comes out.
Yeah. It'll basically be like, I think the finals will be technically tomorrow. If not already the weekend. So. The listeners know better than us what the likely pick will be. Some of the heavy hitters I seen kind of thrown around is Ready or Not, I think is like the second or third year in a row that's been included. House of Wax didn't get included this year, and neither did
Cecily.
Bram Stoker's Dracula, which were another couple of ones that usually make the finals, but they're not here. I saw someone include Neroy the Curse, which I referenced on the Medium episode. There's lots of good stuff here, and then of course Holly just wants Wanuary to never end. She's brooding for Insidious and The Conjuring. So, you know, there's lots of stuff. I'm sure it'll be a fun poll. And what I will say, I think the picks overall, marginally better this year than other years. So I'm excited to kind of get the artwork or the brackets done. Still got to do that and get it up on the socials so everyone can vote.
So yeah, just if you haven't voted, you're listening to this on Sunday and you still got time to vote, go vote for what you want us to review.
Mainly Instagram, by the way, just so people know. Like it will be on Twitter and it'll bleed over to Facebook as well. But, you know, Instagram is where we get most of the traffic for the polls and stuff. So, you know, I mean, if you want to go to every social and vote, go ahead. We'll count the votes. But, Instagram is the big one.
But and I guess it'll almost be done. So, yeah, thanks. Thanks for voting. It's your duty as a citizen. So make sure to do that. Thank you for all the support. We'll be back in 2 weeks. As always, I am your humble host, Rowan.
Bye, it's Mike.
I'm Colton.
Bye, it's Jill.
Don't worry, Daddy. I'll make your fingers skin.